date is the 11th of July, 2015, and I'm here with Sajda Qureshi. My name is Clara Cook, and I'm interviewing her as an alumni for the Oral History Project. Sajda, can you just state your name and your date of birth for me?
Yes. My name is Sajda Qureshi, and my date of birth is 24th of July, 1967.
When did you first come to LSE?
I came in, I think it was 1989, I came to the LSE. I actually came on a program. It was the Analysis Design of Information Systems. The MSc Admis was the second one. The first one was a diploma, so I did my MSc Admis in 2 years. I did intend to do a PhD. I came for the diploma, and then I wanted to join the PhD program, but I was advised to do the MSc Admis. And I think that was the best decision ever made. And I very much appreciate the professor who guided me through that. The MSc Admis was just a wonderful experience. I really, really enjoyed it. It's obviously a program designed to train people for the increasing job market in information systems. But I met so many interesting and amazing people and then went on to do my PhD in information systems. So,
where did you study previously?
I was in Rome. It was John Cabot University. It was an American university in Rome. And prior to that, I went to an English school, St. George's English School in Rome.
And what were your first impressions when you arrived at LSE?
I loved it. It was very international. I just love being able to hear all these different languages and understand a few of them. I speak Italian, and I was able to understand that. And I can also understand a little bit of Urdu and Arabic. And, of course, my English is, I think, okay, so I can understand that too. So, yes, I really did. I loved it. I had a lot of Greek and Italian friends, and just loved. And, of course, English friends too. My family have migrated here over the years, and especially since the 40s, so I've quite a bit of family here.
So you met lots of international students. Did that
Yes.
affect the way that you studied, or did that change your experience?
It did, actually. It did. I think my hall of residence was Rosemary Hall. I had the floor, the graduate student floor. I had a friend of mine. She was actually a PhD student working in Bosnia. She was actually a sociologist collecting stories of Bosnian women. This was just before the war. I was just taken because the reason I went to MSc Admis is I love programming. So I didn't really. You know, the social aspect of technology is just something that I really enjoy, and I've developed over the years in my own research. But really, what struck me was this lovely young Swedish woman spent, I think, 6 months in Bosnia collecting stories about Bosnian women. Her whole thesis was about Bosnian Muslim women in farming sectors. And for me, this was a whole new world. And, of course, she went on and graduated. And I graduated from the master's program, went on to the PhD program. And I remember one time, I think I was still in the PhD program and walking down the stairs. Actually, I think it was this floor, this building. I was walking down somewhere. I think we were, the fourth floor coming out of the cafe. And I see her again. I recognize her. Of course, she's in a suit now. She's a beautiful woman in a suit, and there's a whole bunch of people around her in suits, mostly men. I said, Tuli, and I still remember, I think her name was Tuli. I said, is that you? And she said, hi, yes, it's me. I better go. I have to rush. I said, why, what? Well, I'm leading a delegation to negotiate peace for the European Union for these new countries that have happened, because, of course, Bosnia and Yugoslavia was no more. She did her PhD while it was Yugoslavia, and now, of course, we have Serbia and Bosnia, and these are countries that are developing in the European Union. She was leading the delegation to come to, you know, some agreement there. So I was very, very struck. So I have a lot of respect for sociology and ethnographic research.
And while you were here, did you join any societies or get socially involved with student activities on campus?
That's a very good question. During my master's program, it's a very, very intensive program. So I didn't get involved other than my own group of MSc ADMA students. I did, during my PhD program, start the MSc ADMA Students Society together with Freddie Queck. And that's one that we have a Facebook page. It's kind of an alumnus society. I did start that. But other than that, I was very much involved in getting through my work. I did also work part-time during my PhD years at the Commonwealth Secretariat. That was a very, very busy job. I was traveling quite a bit while doing my PhD. So,
what was your experience of working with and being taught by the faculty here?
It was wonderful. I just, and the lecture today by Professor Cox, I think, just really, really brought back memories of a very different type of instruction. I'm a professor at UNO. I wouldn't get away with teaching like that at an American university, at least. But it's just wonderful. I enjoyed the thinking, the discussion, the conceptual development. It just kind of opened up a new world for me. I really enjoyed the faculty here. I really, really enjoyed listening to them. I enjoyed the discussions. I just really, really enjoyed that. That was wonderful.
How was your experience of being in a campus in central London?
Wonderful. Loved it. Actually, it was, if I may be perfectly honest with you, my master's years were great. It was just, the student life was amazing. My PhD years, I was a graduate assistant. There was an Esprit EEC project. I was working for Professor Patrick Humphreys at the time. Worked for him for a couple of years, and then I got a job at the Commonwealth Secretariat while collecting data there as part of my PhD thesis on networking and interorganizational networking. I developed one of the first computer-supported collaborative systems. It was a computing center at the University of London Computing Center. That's where I went, and I helped develop that. And then we implemented it at the Commonwealth Secretariat across 3 or 4 countries. So that was also part I collected. So my data for my PhD research was the interaction, not the technology, even though I was involved in the development of the technology. That was not interesting. The interesting part was, how do people interact across different countries, different cultures, in a very formal setting, where they have to come up with some ideas and move forward on projects. So that was my PhD thesis, but I also was working there, so I was traveling quite a bit. So coming back to the answer to your question, my experience at the LSE was, I would work 9 to 5 at the Commonwealth Secretariat, walk down Pall Mall, and sometimes the reason I wouldn't take the bus is buses were too slow, so I just walked down. Go to the Lionel Robbins building. I had a little office up in the library. And I'd spend most of my time in the library till about 10, until the library closed, basically. I'd be working in the library, and I had, even then, this is back in, 92? I had a little computer that I'd use to type up my notes. So I'd sit there till about 10 and then go back home, wake up early, go work at the Commonwealth Secretariat, and then come back to the library. So that was my experience as a PhD student here in London at the London School of Economics.
What would you say were the main highlights of being at LSE?
Main highlights, I think, were the relationships. The relationships that I have with the faculty here and the relationships that I have with the students. I actually still one of my best friends is Vladka Hlupic, who was a fellow PhD student. We shared an office up in 5th floor of the library building, and she's a professor and also research director, as I am, and we've been friends ever since, 20-some years. Yes, it's been a wonderful experience, and very supportive through the years as well.
Coming back as an alumni, and also as an academic yourself now.
Yes.
What do you think of what LSE is like now?
You know, that's a very good question. Because for me, there are two answers. One answer as an alumni is the LSE has become much, it's changed a lot. It's, of course, become modern. The world has changed. But I have to say I'm a little disappointed that the Three Tuns Bar is no longer what it was. In my day, it was very different. And there's Che Guevara, Karl Marx, you know, all over the walls. And it was the hotbed of socialism or whatever you want to call it. Even though there were a lot of conservative students around, it was just, I think there's the culture of community and culture of participation, engagement. Whether you engage in the local community or not, it was part of the culture, and it was wonderful. I love that. But that's no longer the case, and it does not reflect badly or well or at all. It's not a reflection on the LSE. I think it's more a reflection on the realities of our time. I have teenage children. It's, you know, culture of individualism. Everyone's looking out for themselves. That's the way world has become, and the LSE is probably moving with the times. So that's as an alum, I'm a little disappointed, but, you know, I'm happy that the LSE is moving with the times. As an academic, the answer is a little bit broader. I think, as we said, the world is changing. I'd like to touch upon the lecture earlier today. There is no such thing as the third world. I know our textbooks back then talked about it. That doesn't exist. China has more millionaires than Europe and the U.S. combined. It is one of the fastest growing economies, along with some economies in Africa. If you take the economists' top fastest growing economies in the world, the U.K., none of the European economies or the U.S. come in there. So the world is changing on the one hand, but as far as education is concerned, I would like to see a better match between the jobs that are being created and the education that's been provided in the classrooms. As much as I love to listen to ideas and theories and talks and empirical research, which is wonderful. This is my training. I'm an empiricist as well as, and of course, I edit a journal, so I'm very clear about theoretical contributions too. But as an academic, I'd like to see a greater emphasis on the jobs that are being created, on training people for the jobs that are being created. Otherwise, the structural unemployment that we're seeing in Europe and the U.S. will continue, and the countries such as China, the BRICS economies, as well as South Africa, will do a better job of providing the skill sets needed by the businesses and that are coming up. For example, I'll just give you an example. I'm a professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, at the College of Information Science and Technology. We train students with various levels of very technical computer science type skills, but I teach information systems, what I learned here. But of course, I have to update my syllabus every semester, unlike the history professors. But coming back to the reality of our time and academic answer to your question, it's very important that students not just get the skill sets, but also the knowledge of what's happening. We have things, concepts like, for example, disintermediation we talk about in e-commerce. It's wonderful to learn how to write programs in Java or develop web pages, but that's not going to help a business succeed. So entrepreneurship is important, and I'm very excited to see that there is a lecture here in entrepreneurship. That's important from an academic point of view. Entrepreneurship is important, but more so skill sets. And when I talk about skill set, I'm not talking about vocational skill sets. I'm talking about problem-solving skill sets, critical thinking skill sets, skill sets that relate to understanding and fact-finding, that people just don't sit there and listen to what they're being told, but go and find the facts. So that's what I'd like to see more in general, not just, you know, nice ideas, but really hardcore fact, empirical training, but also research. But also, I would like to see better emphasis on problem-solving skill sets, critical thinking skill sets, and then possibly, you know, just really basic writing. And if somebody wants programming skill sets, I did some of my best programming here at the LSE when I was working for a European project for Patrick Humphreys. I was developing using a strongly typed, it's a programming language used to build artificial intelligence engines. I was writing programs for Macintosh, what is now Apple, OS 2 programs that would talk to Sun Spark stations, Unix. And what I was doing was I was developing these kind of functions that would pull different programs together and do different things. We call them apps now. So, you know, so I was doing this all those years ago. I was very excited, but it was very, very early for my time. But that's the kind of thing I think is important, application of what we learn in the classroom. Long answer.
Do you think there's anything here that I haven't addressed or I haven't asked you that you would like to talk about?
I would, yes. I was sparked by some of the things that came up in the lecture this morning. I think that when we talk about the world is changing, we talked about, of course, the structural unemployment. The other thing that I think relates more to institutions of higher education and the research that, in the past days, research, we could research whatever we liked. Intellectual stimulus was important, and I'm all for that. I really am. I think people should follow their hearts. They should follow what they're good at. But there is an area that is just really needs to be understood better, that good minds need to put their minds to, and that is the concept of development. And this institution here has been traditionally a very, very strong in the concept of economic development, social development. Sociologists can get involved in it. Human development, how people can lead better lives, you know, what are the different ways. But that's all changing with this thing called technology. So the largest population, do you know which country? Okay, you're not allowed to answer my question, but do you know which country in the world has the largest number of users of mobile payment systems?
India?
Nope. Kenya. 7 trillion. So more than the population. So how come Kenya has mostly, because people have multiple cell phones. So literally, people have multiple cell phones, multiple means of paying, multiple bank accounts, therefore, in their cell phones. So the innovations in technology are taking place in those countries, where students from those countries that I'm seeing are doing so much better than students who are traditionally from Europe and the U.S. And that's an area where I'm seeing institutions of higher education kind of not addressing in the classroom as much as they should, and not addressing through research. And that's an area that I feel very strongly about. I edit a journal in that area, and I would like to see more faculty, more seasoned faculty who know how to do research, really understand these new phenomena. And sociological methods are the best in doing that, because you go in there and you say, oh, wait a minute, these people are supposed to be poor, and they are, but they're just so much more highly technologically advanced because they have access to technologies in ways that other people don't in the rest of the world. So that was my little thing I wanted to talk about. I'd love to talk more, but I know you have someone waiting, so... I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I think that coming back to the academic answer, as an academic and someone who has been educated in the tradition of the London School of Economics, I would like to see institutions of higher education such as the London School of Economics put in more emphasis into the world that is becoming as opposed to world that was, if you see what I'm saying. And one of the reasons a lot of the African students are deciding not to, of course, I'm sure there are visa issues, but the kids who are rich, whose parents are rich, will come to an institution like the LSE, Harvard, Oxford, or Cambridge, because they don't really need those skill sets or problem-solving skills to get the jobs that are being created at the moment. They don't need that. They'll probably end up running their father's business or get a job. And but for the rest of the world, what we're also seeing, there is no such thing as a third world, but Castells talks about this thing called the fourth world. And that is not in one particular country. It's in every country of the world. It's the increasing divide between the rich and the poor. So you have more rich people becoming richer and poor people getting poorer. Now, the educational system is still, you know, stuck there in the middle, trying to address a little bit of both without really addressing the real problem of how do you educate a lot of people to be able to continue to provide factors of, to continue to increase, well, their productivity is increased, but the factors of production also need to be in the right hands. They're not in the right hands, obviously. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing. So a greater education of people, a larger segment of the population that are not restricted because, as we know, talked about earlier, it's the cost of education is too high or whatever, it needs to be addressed. So you do have, for example, online, massive open source online communities that are trying to address that and provide education to the masses. But really the basic critical thinking skills that you get in the classroom, the problem-solving skills that you get, cannot be replicated online. And that needs to happen in a larger scale. And education needs to be a little bit more inclusive. And there should be models out there to enable larger segments of the population to have access to education that addresses the needs of the growing market for critical thinking, problem-solving skill sets.